So, Andy, I have recently watched one of the best animated films, I think, in existence.
Oh, really?
And it was Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. Not only is Puss in Boots: The Last Wish does it have fun characters, does it have a good story, but, like, technically, on a technical level, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week fucking later... I watched Hoodwinked 2, and do you know the thing about Hoodwinked 2 that is, like, weird? It's, like, not that bad. Welcome to Direct Video.
VHS?
podcast where we pair movies like fine wine. This is the second movie in a row, Andy, in which I was abandoned to watch it alone.
True. Yeah. May was like, I'm tired. I think I'm going to go take a nap. She didn't take a nap. She didn't sleep the whole time. She just didn't want to be here while it happened. And that's fair.
No,
I want to be there.
Absolutely. I'll say this. I made reference to it, but like Hoodwinked 2, Hood versus Evil is in immeasurable ways considerably better than Hoodwinked 1.
It is also, in a lot of ways, frustrating how much worse it is in other aspects.
This reminded me more of a Swan Princess sequel than it did of Hoodwinked,
which is good. Not great.
Again, the bar that we're at is Swan Princess.
May has sat through at least two, maybe three. The records are unclear on this. Swan Princess movies, and did not walk out of a single one. Was like, you know what? I'll stick around for this, right? Which I think tells you something about the quality of these films.
She's got to know who the Ghost Beaver is.
And asked me if Hoodwinked was worse than all of the Swan Princess sequels, and I really had to think about it because it is, but it feels wrong saying that, you know.
I mean, it has less baggage, I think I'll say. There was less singing in Hoodwinked, and at least two of the Swan Princess movies I find borderline unwatchable for, like, bad song reasons. So, Hoodwinked, Hood versus Evil. When you turn on this movie, it shows you the cast list. Like, this is a prestige movie that people want to be associated with.
And now here's the thing, though, is that cast list, phenomenal. It's a good cast list.
Okay, so let me say something here. I don't know if I'm going to say her name right. Hayden Panettiere?
Yes.
Is a better Red Riding Hood than Anne Hathaway.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's because Hayden Panettiere does voice acting. I don't know if she was just, like, younger and so could sell it better. Like, I don't know what the reason is, but, like, I hated Anne Hathaway's Red Riding Hood.
I definitely think it had to do a bit more with the fact that the things that Hayden Panettiere had to say weren't as, like, egregious.
Maybe. I also think, like, she could sell, like, being a kid to me.
Yeah, yeah. I think
in a way that felt better. Like, she's also, I mean, maybe it's just that, I'm sure at that point, Anne Hathaway was technically, like, a working actor, but she's someone who's been famous since she was, like, I don't know, 17.
Yeah, and, like, that's fair.
I feel like Hayden Panettiere, I know who she is, but I feel like a lot of people don't. And that's also fine.
I think Hayden Panettiere is one of those actresses that if you just told somebody her name, they'd be like, who? And then if you showed them like a picture of her, they'd be like, oh.
They'd be like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Her. Like from that video game.
Depending on how old you are from Heroes.
Yeah.
She was in Nashville as well. I don't know. Like, there are a lot of people who care about Nashville a lot, but I'm not one of those people. Glenn Close is in here. She's great.
She does okay. It's not a super amazing performance, to be honest.
No. Joan Cusack is in this movie. And she's Who's great.
John Cusack?
Well, she's, I believe, John Cusack's sister.
Stop it.
She
fucking sold that character really well. I was like shocked by how entertained I was by her for like the first half of the movie before she takes the mask off. Then she's boring. Were Bill Hader and Amy Poehler in a different movie where they were the bad guys and also siblings?
You know, it feels like it should have happened. But I don't think so. It makes sense that they work well together. They're both SNL alum. You have, you know, Cheech and Chong are in here, but they'll do anything for money.
They will do anything for money. I found myself, when I realized that was Cheech and Chong, I was like, okay, I can hang with this for a little while. However, again, Cheech and Chong are two of the three little pigs, okay? And they make reference to the three little bears, to three bears in this scene. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think about Puss in Boots, where the three bears are in that movie, and they're very good. Brad Garrett's in this as the giant. The giant was a fun character. Like, there's a lot of decent stuff.
Yeah, there's, like, ideas here. There's ideas floating around.
There's, like, whole scenes that aren't
unwatchable.
Terrible. Like,
yeah. Anyone else who matters? There are a couple of other people in here who are like, you know, oh, that's cool that they're here. But Danny Pudi, who is Abed in Community, in this movie, in a very early role, I assume, for him. He's just the guy on the radio. He's the blue. He's little boy blue on the radio.
Yeah, I saw him listed and I was like, I didn't even clock that character. And of course, Patrick Warburton is back as the big bad wolf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In a very odd role, in a very odd rendition of the character as well.
They don't know what to do with this character, which is not the end of the world, but it's like, again, sometimes he was the only thing to carry a scene through to the end, but they didn't know how to use him.
Here's the problem, is you have to make a sequel to a movie that is largely uneventful and uncompromising. In its just absolute terribleness. And so they had to give these characters flaws to fix. Now, when you make a sequel to a movie, you're already kind of in a boat where characters have ended the last movie theoretically in a place where they have, you know, like, grown. And so it's already hard. But here, it feels like these characters are not the same characters at all from the first movie. They're in such emotionally different places that it feels like this is a prequel and not a sequel.
They're weird. It's weird. If they wanted this to work, it probably could have been a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Like a Monster of the Week type thing where they have to face a new fairy tale thing every day. That might work.
You get at least one season out of that idea.
Yeah. But instead, instead we start shooting tear gas at children.
We sure do.
I wonder if the whole reason Hansel and Gretel are evil is so you can forgive cops for shooting tear gas at them.
They had to save them with the tear gas.
Yeah. Here's the other thing. We don't need to belabor this point, but this is a world without guns. To the point where, like, people don't even, like, point weapons at each other, okay? They are trying to do this... Okay, so it starts with, there's a gingerbread house, kid's been kidnapped by a witch, right?
Yep.
They are treating it as, like, a hostage standoff. But if they kicked down the door and just tackled the witch, she wouldn't be able to do shit because she's not holding a knife to them. She's not holding a gun to them. She doesn't even know that they're there. And they seem to think it's absurd that the wolf just wants to fucking get in there.
Yeah, I don't understand what... there's like 100 of them. What did they think is going to happen?
Why are we just waiting around for her to stick them in the oven?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, so Patrick Warburton does some, like, dumbass disguise shit to try to save these kids. And everybody's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And he does it. And it tips off the witch as she flies out on her broom.
mm-hmm.
which has rockets on it.
It sure does.
With Hansel and Gretel each in their own bespoke birdcage. And so Granny and the wolf go after him. Red is not here because she is off doing training in a place that I kind of wished we hadn't spent quite so much time at because it made me very irritated.
She's over in Kung Fu Panda for a little bit. So yeah. We'll get to her.
Except Kung Fu Panda's good. Like, there's Kung a Fu slight Panda's difference.
So good.
Kung Fu Panda's a fun movie. So Patrick Warburton's doing his fucking level best to sell this scene, and I do appreciate it, but it is not super working.
Here's what I'll say is that Patrick Warburton shows up to work and he is working. It is unfortunate for him that the material is not that good sometimes.
But like I said, like, it has a better animation budget than the last one, and even that just helps sell these action scenes just a little more. So, Granny gets herself kidnapped, which mm-hmm. is, I mean, she's supposed to be a badass, but okay, whatever. So you're like, okay, inciting incidents, Granny gets kidnapped, right? So now mm-hmm. Red and the Big Bad Wolf have to team up. That tracks, I suppose. She gets kidnapped. He's like, this was all my fault, because it genuinely was. He seems to have a hard time deciding through the movie whether he is guilt-ridden about this or just a big dumbass who's going to keep doing the same shit over and over.
Yeah.
like, the movie's trying to keep it light, but it wants him to have some characterization and it can't figure out how to do both. So she's kidnapped, and then I guess we go into this fucking Kung Fu Panda ass Marty McFly nonsense.
Yeah, we find ourselves at the Sisterhood of Kung Fu Baking, which is the stupidest thing I've ever said in my life.
Oh, Andy, don't sell yourself short.
Thank you. this whole thing is, I don't want to talk about this too much, but there's like a scene where Red is like fighting an ogre, and it manages to be, or a troll, I guess it's a troll, I'm not really sure, actually,
something, but, yeah,
but this scene manages to be both fatphobic, racist, and homophobic all at the same time, which is astounding to me. The it truly is kung fu if you think about it, the degrees at which it fucking like punched me in the sternum. But essentially Red is being trained by the Society of Bakers who trained her grandma, I guess, and we get a whole bunch of hullabaloo that doesn't matter. We get a pretty funny scene where a woman gets hit in the face by what do they call those things?
Rolling pin.
I like that.
I want to mention the Marty McFly thing.
Oh yeah. Because
this, I swear to God, will not come back. It mm-hmm. kind of does, but since it's a fake out, I don't count it.
Yeah.
The troll ogre calls Red a chicken, and then she immediately is like, what'd you say? And goes to kick his ass and fails her thing because she's got to fucking keep her cool and deliver her cookies, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And like, not only have they stolen this from Back to the Future, but they even stole the dumb thing that Back to the Future did, which was introduce this in the second movie for some reason. And it's just like, what are we doing? Why are we doing that?
Because they don't.
It doesn't matter.
These characters need flaws, but the problem.
It's a terrible flaw. It's a shit ass flaw. Back to the Future. The only reason it worked at all was because it stopped him from being maimed for life. That's how much you have to raise the stakes to make this flaw any good.
And it sucks because, like, at the end of this movie, all of these introduced bullshit flaws don't get resolved.
Mm-mm. I mean, arguably, the Big Bad Wolf's flaw is, like, the opposite of resolve. They're like, it turns out you should have just been doing exactly this the whole time.
Yeah, in a scene that reads as, it reads very weird, that scene.
All the scenes read weird.
All the scenes
there
read weird.
There is some, I hate that I enjoyed this joke because it was, one, a modern reference, which I hate in these kind of things. mm-hmm. and two, very clearly ADR'd in, like, hey, we need a line here.
Yeah.
One of them says they're trying to keep their secret recipe away from the Food Network, and there's an ADR line from fucking nowhere that somebody goes, yeah, Rachel Ray's the devil, and I don't know, that got me.
I also really liked that. I thought that was really funny.
I got mad because I was like, where did this even come from?
Yeah, it's, listen, I don't like Rachel Ray either, you know, like, but
I had to look her up to make sure there wasn't like anything like,
yeah, I don't know if there's anything going on in the year of our Lord.
I think she's just like not that likable a person.
Yeah, I think Rachel Ray just rubs people the wrong way, and you know what, that's valid, but like, it's one thing for me, a person who is nobody, to be like, I don't really like Rachel Ray. It's another thing for a movie that came out in theaters to just kind of do that, you know. You gotta really, like, be sure with your law team. There's a secret recipe for truffles that... and the
magic truffles,
Yeah, magic truffles. They make you invincible for an undetermined period of time and for an undetermined amount of power.
Yes, they keep on saying, like, invincible or unbeatable, and in, like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Because that's a very vague thing. It doesn't increase your power tenfold. And yes, they say it can wear off, but they don't say when it wears off.
Yeah, yeah, for an undetermined amount of time. It's a truly, it is the most undefined MacGuffin. Except for the mm-hmm. fact that at one point, they do flash the recipe on screen.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they like the Wicked Witch, who has a name, I don't remember it, shows it. Yeah, Veruschka von Klein or whatever. She shows it, and the camera like cuts to it for a brief second. And this is truly funny, which is that I believe when they were listing off some of the ingredients, May was like, "That's too sweet," which is very funny to me.
It gives you unlimited power, but I guess you don't want your teeth to go.
I want it to taste good. I don't like truffles. I'm not a truffle guy.
If it gives you unlimited power, choke it the fuck down. Now, what it actually does is it just makes you big, as far as I can tell.
But that's the thing,
just how it reacted to Hansel and Gretel.
Again, undefined. It is an undefined source of... Here's the thing, Tony, is if somebody gave me something and they were like, hey, this will give you unlimited power in an undefined manner, my first thought is, oh, you've just given me, like, uranium encoded in chocolate, and I'm not going to eat this. I need some firm boundaries.
Think about that.
Think about that.
I mean, I could eat some batteries. I shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, we've all licked a battery at some point.
Mm-hmm, why not?
Don't do it, especially if it's got a lithium leak, for the love of God.
So we got our characters. They're back together because...
Well, two of them are back together.
Yeah. And they're going to go track down Granny in the city. The big city.
San Francisco.
I literally don't know if they say that. It's very clearly San Francisco.
You can't show me the Golden Gate Bridge. It's the Golden Gate Bridge. You can't show me the Golden Gate Bridge and not expect me to be like, they're just in San Francisco. Right? Like,
No. This is the city. There are no other cities in this world.
You can't do that, right? Like, you have to, like, at least, you could have at least made it, like...
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, you know, a better writer. It sucks so bad. You can't, like, they put it in the movie so that you would go, oh, yeah, it's the Golden Gate Bridge. But, like, it doesn't work if you're supposed to be in, like, your stupid fucking magic fantasy world. You could have made it the Golden Gate Bridge, but, like, maybe it was made out of Mars bars or something,
maybe,
right?
Maybe it's, like, got a fucking dragon sitting on it. Like, give me something. Just show me it's different. Especially because there is a beanstalk going up into the clouds, like, a mile high. With a club on top of it? But the rest of the city is a city.
Yeah.
This is when I saw the poster of Kirk, and I'm like, oh man, Kirk being back is a bad idea. And then he wasn't back, but he will be. Don't worry.
But then he did, and I was like, God damn it.
God damn it.
They go to the big city. Red and Wolf are just not getting along. For a really bullshit reason, I don't think at the end of the first movie they were like, friends. They still kind of, like, didn't like each other.
Red and Wolf. Wolf is codependent to Red in a way that was obviously not a defining aspect of his character. The man is a very independent person.
He's a journalist.
Like, he's just an investigative journalist. He travels doing all these different investigations. But now he's super codependent on Red, and he can't fucking do anything if she's not around, apparently. And so, like, he's mad at her for not having been there. And she's mad at him for letting Granny get kidnapped. And he's mad at himself because he thinks he let Granny get kidnapped. But fucking also, he has, like, undiagnosed ADHD or something and keeps forgetting that he's mad at himself about that.
It's true.
Like, he will just fully, like, lose himself in a scene, forgetting that he's supposed to be racked with guilt.
The big city truly was a bad idea because they... You know in Zootopia... God. You know how in Zootopia, if you just, like... When in any city scene, if you just, like, pause and you just kind of look, there's just, like, a lot going on, you know?
Uh-huh.
There's, like, a little, like, gerbil city. There's, like doors of different sizes for different animal types. There's, like, different modes of transportation. Just an eclectic crew of people just living their lives in this beautiful animal city. In this movie, they didn't have the money to do that, and so I saw deadass the same fucking polar bear like 8 times.
I think that's why the Golden Gate Bridge is there. Somebody was just like, we have to make it look like a city, and they're like, what does that mean? Like, drag a JPEG of the Golden Gate Bridge in there, make it look 3D.
Yeah.
Because they just, like, they couldn't build something, you know what I mean? Like, they, and it's much worse, to me it's much worse. In the denouement when the kids are destroying the city and it's like, oh, nobody lives here.
It looks like cars driven by ghosts.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, man. The idea of like a haunt... Sorry, just a tangent. The idea of like, instead of a haunted house, it's a haunted city and all of the cars are like driving around with nobody inside of them. That kicks ass.
Every time I hear about ghost stuff, I'm just going to be sad that we watched a cow movie that had no fucking ghosts in it, even though there were supposed to be ghosts in the cow movie.
Yeah.
We got to do a Scooby-Doo one at some point, so I stop being sad about ghosts.
We can do a Scooby-Doo one next.
Maybe.
They go to the club.
Yeah, they go to the club. They want to get the singing...
Harp
from Jack and the Beanstalk because it's Granny's mole, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Not mole, exactly.
Like contact.
Stoolie, you know. Somebody she pays for information who works for a mob boss.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they go confront the giant about it, which seems like a fucking buck wild way to go about this. Red goes to confront him. It goes poorly, and so... Wolf throws on a terrible disguise, makes a pretty good con joke, and the giant likes him, and so then they have this whole scene where they're trying to fucking charm Brad Garrett, and it's only going okay, and eventually they just steal the harp and run.
How do I describe this? This scene is like the equivalent, the pacing of this scene is equivalent to, like, constipation. Because... They could just steal the harp. That's fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or they could charm the big mob boss, and we could have a whole scene where we're learning about him. I hate to bring Zootopia up again, but you know, like
that. But that happens in Zootopia.
And that's fun.
It's a fun scene, although the implications are rough the longer you think about it.
I have a lot of problems with Zootopia.
How this cop is buddy-buddy with this mob boss.
I have a lot of problems with Zootopia, but I like it. I like the movie.
Anyway, moving on.
But instead, we get this, like, prolonged indecision. Are we going to steal it, or are we going to charm the guy? Or are we just going to beat the shit out of him and take it? Turns out that's just not a good idea. He's a giant. And we end up doing all three. But like, this feels like a protracted, the reason I say it feels constipated is because it feels like a protracted like D&D encounter, right?
Oh yeah, you failed at the one thing, so I gotta go try the other thing.
But like, in
they failed to charm the giant, but the DM's gonna give him one more roll.
and then the rogue is like, I'm just gonna steal it.
Yeah, fuck this.
In D&D, what can you do? Everyone at the table's stupid. Like we all become commensurate 5-year olds the moment we have to role play in a fantasy world. That's not anybody's fault but D&D's. But in a film where you're in complete control, why did this happen?
Somebody should take a second look at this script.
Right. Three people looked at this script. Sorry. Three people looked at this script. Four people looked at this script. And the fact that it exists like this tells me that every single one of these people needs to get a different day job.
So they get into this chase fight scene or whatever. And Red gets mad at Wolf. And Wolf gets mad at Red. And I guess he quits. I sort of forgot this happened, but it's in my note. That my next note is Red walking around the city is very lame. Because I think she just sadly walks around the city like trying to find some dumbass thing.
She's doing, they do like a bit where they go to an asylum.
Oh my god, yeah, you know what? I forgot about this because I couldn't care less. I don't need a Silence of the Lambs reference with the very stupid bad guy from the last movie. I just didn't need it, and I think I totally forgot about it.
No, it's truly stupid. I'm looking at I want the audience to know that I am looking at a Wikipedia summary of this movie to remind myself of what happened, because like I said, this movie is mercurial. It will slip out of your brain and only leave behind a little bit of lunacy. So they it's the bunny
don't
from
put
the first.
Don't put mercury on your brain.
Don't put mercury on your brain. They see the bunny again. I forget what the fucking bunny's name is. The bunny's like, I'm still evil and I still hate you guys.
It's something like fucking Bun Bun or something, like something stupid. Boingo is his name, played by Andy Dick.
Came back for this one. Huh. So they find out that Boingo has been the kind of go-between for the witch and all of these ingredient heists. I don't know why you couldn't just go to the store and buy them. For all of the ingredients that they need to make the magic truffle, if you all want to remember why they're doing any of this at all. And then at the end of that scene, find out that the cleaning lady was actually the witch the whole time, and she flies away, but before
which
she does,
obviously
she...
obviously she was?
Yeah, right, I know.
You see her from the back and you're like, that's the witch, they should go get her.
Yeah, the wolf. I don't understand why Red is like, I should have recognized her. No, you shouldn't have. You're the only character in this movie who doesn't know what the fuck she looks like. You know who should have recognized her? The guy whose whole thing is disguises.
The wolf has only seen her from the back, and all he sees is her back.
He sees that big old beehive, dude. Dead to rights.
By the way, we didn't mention this, but it feels important. Granny was kidnapped because she knows how to make this.
Oh, yeah.
Truffle. And the threat that the witch has is she's going to kill the kids if Granny doesn't make the truffle. Mm-hmm. This, as we've already mentioned, Hansel and Gretel are evil, which is the only thing you can do with Hansel and Gretel in this kind of movie. Obviously they are.
They are committed to breaking and entering. Like, they have to be evil.
You know there's going to be a twist.
Yeah.
Because this is literally like a twisted fairy tale style movie. So considering how little you see Hansel and Gretel in the beginning, the only twist is that they're evil, because otherwise they're just nothing characters.
And yeah, otherwise Bill Hader and Amy Poehler were paid a lump sum to do nothing. And that's
to
insane.
To do not just sit around in front of a microphone like, do I have any lines?
You just want me to do a funny voice for like 30 minutes? That was a really good Bill Hader. I'm really proud of myself for that. Amy Poehler was in Parks and Recreation, right? Like, it feels such a waste of talent. The witch escapes. I mean, escapes is the wrong word. She leaves in a dramatic fashion.
Right.
And when she does, she rips off her uniform. I don't know why, but on the uniform is like a tag with like an initialism on it. And so Red is sadly walking around the city like showing this to people, but the bit is that every company in the city has those initials. But Red and Wolf also get into their big fight. Ooh. Oh no. It all comes out.
I mean, I guess it kind of does.
It really just kind of comes off as Red, like, really, like, putting Wolf down a little bit.
She puts Wolf down a little bit. Again, he remembers, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be mad at myself about Granny getting kidnapped. And so he's like, yeah, you know what? You're right. And he leaves. And he goes back to his trailer that he lives in.
Mm-hmm. Big missed opportunity for a joke here. He should have lived in a brick house.
That would have been fun. They never tell us why the pigs hate the big bad wolf.
I mean, Tony, we know why.
No, we don't. Because this is not that same character. Did he were they like gentrifying a neighborhood and he wrote an article and it tore their houses down? What happened?
Oh man, you know what would have been a good one is if they were doing like housing scams, they were building like a ton of houses for cheap for the yeah. City. That's a thing that happened in El Paso where I used to live. That would have been good. Insurance fraud.
That would have something.
I know a lot of people have pointed out this scene, and it's with good reason. But in Tintin, when in the Adventures of Tintin, when he pulls out just like a real gun,
that happens in Tintin.
Yeah, we watched the movie, Tony.
You and I did not watch Tintin.
Did we not? Well, I've seen it.
Tintin?
The Adventures of Tintin. It's by Steven Spielberg, directed by Steven Spielberg.
I did not know it was a Spielberg movie either.
Wow, that's
but
amazing.
It would have been when everybody was done with Spielberg.
It's fantastic, by the way. It is genuinely really good. But at one point in that movie, Tintin does hold like a gun. Like a gun-ass gun. And it's so jarring to be in this.
All right,
like,
wait. Just out of curiosity here. Tintin's the kid?
Or yeah, the well dog? He's not a kid. Tintin is the young man, but he is a journalist. He's not a boy. He's just a very young man.
It was important to me to know if the dog pulled out a gun.
That would have been even better.
Like in a very good TRPG recording of them doing Scooby-Doo that I watched once.
Rocked and roaded.
Good shit. Good shit.
No, the dog's name is Snowy.
A shame, but okay.
It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. I really enjoy it. But it is jarring to see, like, you know, a bunch of cartoon characters, like, in this whimsical adventure, all of a sudden just, like, have a gun. And you're like, whoa. Tintin is one of those weird comics that, like, it takes place during, like, the height of British colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's a weird time all around, but
I bet you that a lot of Tintin comics are unreadable by modern standards just for, like, casual racism and bigotry.
Oh, 100%. I have heard that they're good, and but they're also in French, which adds another layer of, like, unreadability because the French are so weird about their racism. I had a similar feeling when, Wolf is in his trailer home and he goes over to talk to Twitch about the squirrel. By the way, the squirrel's in this movie. Its name is Twitch.
Yeah, I knew we were gonna have to say it. We hadn't mentioned Twitch at all because he's basically like Wolf's familiar. He's not enough of his own character for us to really talk about.
Wolf's Damon.
Yeah. It's Damon.
And then the three pigs show up and they pull out a bazooka like a fucking Heimar and just fire it into the wolf's trailer, and blowing it to smithereens. And I had a very similar moment where I was like, this is a different movie.
The amount of brutal, unnecessary, wanton destruction that these pigs are bringing to the table. Later, they will raid the agency that they all work for.
This happens right about this time.
Yeah, it happens about the same time, because it's a coordinated attack. And nobody is hurt in that attack. They just, like, apparently knock over some stuff and grab some sheep or something, because everybody's fine later.
I do think they kidnap all the sheep is the thing, which is very funny. Those are Bo Peep's sheep, which...
That's what they say, but then I see the sheep later, so you can't God just say
it.
Shit.
God damn it.
Like, they're there at the end, and I was like, where'd they all come from? I thought everybody was kidnapped.
That reminds me of the only joke in the movie that made me laugh out loud, which happens earlier when Red goes back to the agency when she finds out that her grandma gets kidnapped and walks in on Wolf telling Bo Peep, I'm not saying they shouldn't work here. I'm just saying they look delicious.
Yes, he does say that.
Which really got me. Yeah, there's a coordinated attack. The entire happily ever after agency is destroyed.
All things considered, this is like too well planned an operation, particularly to have gone under the radar to the extent that it seems to have. Maybe the DEA is very bad at their jobs. So Wolf's trailer's destroyed, but he was in
Twitchy's trailer.
So they fucking book it and they narrowly avoid getting blown up. And then some the fuck how the pigs are also back in front of the hotel at the exact same time.
No, it's because there's like a ton of them.
One of them is Chong. Like
it's the bit is that they're all voiced by Cheech and Chong. So they all have of three personalities, which is either they're Cheech, they're Chong, or they're silent.
So Wolf gets back to Red eventually. I mean he fucking the DEA is destroyed, he goes back to Red, blah 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 blah. Here's the problem. They realize they need some muscle.
There's only one person they know.
Surely they should meet other people. They go ask fucking Kirk, the lunatic actor slash singer that they know. And he's like, oh yeah, all of my backup singers are mercenaries. Okay. So we get this whole, basically, they're doing the same joke as in the first one. But yes. Times four.
Yes.
All the yodelers beat up the pigs, and luckily the yodelers are not on screen for very long. And they get upstairs. I genuinely thought that this movie might forget that they don't know that Hansel and Gretel are evil. But it doesn't.
I also thought that.
Yeah. Because Hansel and Gretel have revealed themselves to Granny.
That they were evil.
And which means that Granny will not make the thing that they want. Because they have no threat anymore. But they remembered, so in a pretty good scene, Wolf takes Hansel and Gretel downstairs, and when they get in the elevator, they put on gas masks, and he's like, yeah, always carry little gas masks, because you never know. There's, like, good lines here, and I think it's Patrick Warburton's delivery, because the same thing happened in the last movie, where, like,
Patrick Warburton knows how to pace a joke. Like, he knows how to deliver a joke.
What's fun is, like, it's, like, the comedy of dramatic irony is like, that's when the wolf is funny. When he doesn't get something that you, the audience, immediately get. I'm thinking of the only joke I remember of the last movie where they're in a fucking mine cart and Twitch says, oh, look, candles. And the wolf goes, candles, light them up.
Light them up.
He's just so excited to have candles.
Those give off a really good light there. What brand are they? It's so good. It's genuinely a joy for like, because Patrick Warburton, like, and he knows how to fucking do it. He get him and the squirrel get knocked out by gas. Hansel and Gretel escape. And Red goes to save her, goes to save Granny and is in a room where there's a bowl of baked good materials. And she's like, huh? And she goes to taste it. And her innate kung fu baking abilities tells her that it's missing macadamia nuts. And she says this out loud.
Now hold the fucking phone. All right. We need to take a second to talk about Verushka's dark backstory. Her dark backstory is that she's not as good as Granny at anything. And she wishes she was as good as Granny. So she wants to make this truffle. And that's why she kidnapped Granny, okay? She says that for 60 years, she has been putting the ingredients together and trying to figure out what the last ingredient is. This witch has never tried macadamia nuts?
In a truffle, I know.
Like the fucking third nut that you would try?
What would be the first two? Walnuts?
I mean, almonds and walnuts, I think.
Yeah, and walnuts, then macadamia almonds. Nuts. I would try pecans first, but I'm from New Mexico, so that's like, you know.
You might be right. But like, there are nuts that you often use for baking, and macadamia nuts is one of them.
High up there. White people love that shit on their cookies.
It gives such a good crunch because it's not as hard as an almond, so it breaks apart a little easier.
It's a little more brittle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almonds, you have to prepare, you have to like roast a little bit so that they can soften up.
I'm not a big fan of almonds in baking because I do think they're just a little hard for it.
Yeah. But covered in chocolate,
macadamia
though?
Nuts, pecans, or that stuff. What's that?
Covered in chocolate, though.
All right. I'll still do like a pecan first, though.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I prefer walnuts, but I know a lot of people think that walnuts are a little too tart, which is fair.
So it's just like, what was she doing? Trying? Sorry, she's supposed to be like number two after Granny. Mm-hmm. Granny has a baking empire.
Yeah.
This movie has forgotten that she's had that, but that's fine. So
she's a secret agent now.
Yeah, but
also, as far as we know, that baking empire consisted of just her and Red, and maybe this was just like a product of budget, but like we don't ever see like a factory or anything.
They couldn't have come up with an ingredient that I could buy that she had not tried, so they probably shouldn't have that line in there. But the ingredient they came up with is a fucking normal ingredient.
It is the most normal ingredient.
They could have gone more normal, maybe, if they had been like, mint leaf. Like, yeah. But, like, otherwise.
Or even just, like, you know, this is a thing that weirds me out as, like, a non-baker, but a little bit of salt.
Oh, yeah. It just needs a pinch more salt.
Just needs that a little
bit. Actually, that would have been fucking great. I would have enjoyed that.
Because that's a joke that's, like, based in knowledge.
Right. I don't know if I would have added a pinch more salt to it. You know, I can never tell when something needs a little more salt.
I hate it whenever somebody tells me that you need to salt and pepper to taste. I don't know what that means. I know what too much salt tastes like.
I don't know what just enough salt tastes like.
Yeah. Like, what? How am I supposed to know? I'm a guy who doesn't. I get so much anxiety when I'm in the kitchen. You know.
I'll tell you this for free, because it's what my family always did. I'll tell you this for free. This is free advice.
Yeah, normally you charge me like a 20 for these.
Yeah, absolutely. all baking recipes will tell you to use unsalted butter and salt to taste. There's a shortcut here. Use salted butter. Do you know who salted it to taste? I don't know. Some fucking guy at the butter place.
Is that the butter place?
The butter place. They don't know how butter's made there at the butter place. I don't need to know. I'm just in the kitchen.
Baking is a harder science. I've made chocolate chip cookies, the easiest thing in the world to make. But like, I think it's harder when it's like, oh, I'm making a soup. I need hard measurements.
For me, I much prefer baking because it's like, if you follow the directions, it'll work.
The problem I have with being in the kitchen is I get too distracted. So I'll start cooking and then I'll be like, oh, I should wash the dishes or, you know, make myself a cup of tea. you know, this really is the bane of my life, which is that the moment I start doing anything, my brain is immediately like, God, there are like five other things I could be doing right now. And I should just be doing all of them. But the thing is I don't know how to multitask. I can't multitask. I just do something and then I go and do something else. And then eventually I'm like, oh, I think something's burning. Oh, right. 10 steps ago, I was cooking something.
So these little assholes eat the truffle. They get big. They immediately turn on the witch for no reason.
I mean, but also, of course they were, right? Like, what's she bringing to the table?
I'll tell you what she's bringing to the table, man. She's the only one who can bake. They have not they have not said that they can bake. It doesn't seem like they have the ability to bake, and they have said that they're going to start like a evil empire of baking goods now and just sell these to a bunch of people.
That's literally the plot of the first movie. What the fuck?
Yeah. So I'm like, so who are they going to get to bake them? I mean, obviously they can hire somebody else, but why don't they just hire her? She's here. Anyway, they turn on her. They release a big spider to try to kill everybody. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go after him.
It's funny because like we get a shot of the city from like really far away and there's like explosions in the distance. And I'm like, yeah, this works. And then we get closer and it's daytime. And it's like, God, this is just like devoid of life. Like there is no, they can't afford to animate too many things running around to be destroyed. We get a lot of lame King Kong jokes and references here.
They get into this fight. They pretty definitely lose. They're in like a bus or something, and it is thrown so high that it's like on a steeple on the top of the giant's thing or whatever. No, it's on the hotel.
Yeah.
And they have a big scene where they all apologize to each other, and it fully doesn't work. The only thing I liked about it is when they're falling to their deaths, Wolf says, "I thought you'd said we'd be okay," and Granny says, "I exaggerated."
That's good.
Which I didn't think was good.
That whole scene, now here's the problem. There's a lot of, the whole movie is built around this like tension between Wolf and Red. But the problem is the source of the tension. Wolf feels like he is a non-contributor. He feels he's codependent on Red completely. He feels like he brings nothing to the team. And Red agrees. And so this apology is, it feels like, you know, like an ex-boyfriend coming back. And so the vibes of the whole scene are a little bit off, to the point where I was like, are they trying to imply that there's like a romantic relationship here, or do they just not, or is it just like the source of these emotions just kind of feels weird to me?
There cannot be a romantic relationship. Wolf because, is approaching middle age.
Yeah, like, and Red is a child.
He's like mid-30s maybe. Mm-hmm. And Red is a kid. I don't know to what extent she's a kid. She might be 16, she might be 12, but she's like a kid.
She could be 17.
She could be. I don't know.
The definition of age in this is bananas, but the problem that is like the underlying problem with this scene is that like it is just Wolf like pouring his heart out and Red going, "Nah, it's cool, man. It's okay." It's like, "What is happening? You're an adult. Pull yourself together."
It has a lot of the same issues as the last movie, which is that Red is the least interesting character because for some reason they don't want to give her flaws. Not real ones. Like,
no, nothing tangible.
And so like she has nothing to apologize for. And yeah, it makes it very weird. Red says something about trying to stop the kids before they have even more of those truffles. And Granny reacted, and I thought that she figured out she should have just been doing Iron Man from the beginning, but that's not what she figured out.
No.
I thought she was like, because, okay, the obvious solution, right, is you're in a cave and somebody's trying to make a baking weapon, is you eat the baking weapon, so now you're strong enough to break out of the cave, like Iron Man did, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And I thought we were going to get, like, a fight scene at the end of this thing, and we didn't. Instead, the trick is to trick them into eating more, and then they just get really fat, and that's it.
And that's the movie. And Red and Wolf are partners again, and they steal a car to go off on more adventures.
And Granny fucking stays behind, and I kind of thought that she was the leader.
But instead, her and Vrishka or whatever.
Vrishka?
Yeah, are like going to go back to the sisterhood, I guess, because they need backup to reorganize. I don't know,
they're going to do some dumb shit. It doesn't matter, because they didn't make a third movie.
It's true, they didn't, and they never will.
No, that would be the wildest choice. Just absolutely insane.
That'd be like making a Toy Story 5.
That was a little mean-spirited, but yeah, basically.
It is wild that it's happening, you know?
I watched Toy Story 4 a couple months ago, and I realized that every Toy Story movie that had like a finale was ruined by it not being the last of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought Toy Story 4 was good, but the whole time I was like, but this ruins the message of Toy Story 3. And then when Toy Story 4 ended, I was like, that was really good, but I know there's another one coming which will ruin this message.
Yeah, but there's a part of me that's like, listen, you guys, like, you can't, like, it feels so much like they're playing with fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At some point, they got, I don't know, I don't want to say lucky, they're incredibly talented filmmakers, but, like, to have made 4 movies in one franchise that, as far as I'm concerned, not only are they all bangers, but they're all better than the last one. Even if Toy Story 5 is good, if it's not great, if it's not better than Toy Story 4, I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna be like, I don't know if we needed it. And that's like not their fault, but that's the standard that they set.
Yeah, and I mean, they did make a very terrible Buzz Lightyear movie.
Yeah, but you know, like, that, the less said about that, the better. Like, that movie's so fucking wild. Not only in how bad it is, but also in how devoid of context it is.
I think a lot about that movie, about how many Toy Story references are in it, but how very few Buzz Lightyear references are in it.
Yeah.
I think a lot about the opening line of that movie that claims that this was the origin of the character of Buzz Lightyear, when it so clearly is not. This is a retrospective.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, the point is, Hood vs. Evil was almost okay, but genuinely quite bad. And you never have to watch it, because we did, and now you have an opinion on it for some reason. Like, a real fool. Real fool.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is the energy I'm bringing. I guess I'm a little punchy from having watched Hoodwinked 2, Hood vs. Evil.
I want to bring something up, because we talked a little bit about how the animation in this movie is better.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one problem that this movie consistently has throughout the entire film. The lip syncing in this movie is abominable. It's so bad. There are multiple scenes in which characters are talking and their mouths basically aren't moving at all. They just kind of open a little bit. And the reason I bring this up is because this movie had a budget of $30 million.
That is so much more. That is, I think, $22 million more
than the last movie. I didn't know this, and now that I do know this, I'm like, no, you know, it is truly tough. I think this property is toxic, and nobody should touch it with a 10-foot pole. Like, it's so devoid of any originality or, like, even respect for the form. It cares so little about being anything other than a property that can be sold alongside other bigger, more famous things. I just don't think it's, like, worth anything. It's so hard to make a movie that I hate more than Shrek. And yet, here we are.
And again, you know, I just watched Puss in Boots.
The Last Wish.
A truly gorgeous movie, and I love all of the characters, and I love the story. It's, like, it's basically perfect. But sometimes it will remind you that, like, yeah, this is a Shrek spinoff movie. And I'll have a moment where I'm like, isn't it amazing that they have managed to develop this world out so differently than how Shrek was? I think that's great. But I think that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to do that. It is impossible to do that to Hoodwinked, and nobody should try.
Yeah, it has been... We're coming up on almost 15
sorry,
years.
Have you seen... Sorry. Have you seen Puss in Boots?
The Last Wish?
The Last Wish, not the original one.
No, I haven't.
There is a moment where one of the bad guys, because there are multiple bad guys, literal death is a villain in this movie. It's amazing.
That's awesome. That
pulls,
kicks ass.
Pulls Excalibur out of his bag, and he's like, yeah, I have Excalibur. Couldn't get this rock off the end, but it's still pretty cool. And just starts swinging it around.
That kicks ass. That's so good.
So fucking hilarious, and like, that's how you make a reference to, like, magic and, like, how you're part of a bigger magical world. You don't just, like, do Hansel and Gretel, but what if Hansel and Gretel are evil now? This is the second worst movie featuring Hansel and Gretel that I have ever seen.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. Jesus Christ. Man, you want to know something crazy?
Yeah.
It's been almost 15 calendar years since the last Shrek movie.
It has not. Good lord.
Shrek Forever After came out in 2010.
It's weird that was the last one. No, I guess it's not. I guess it's weird because the internet exists. So Shrek, oddly, is in the zeitgeist almost as much as fucking Garfield is.
Well, and we are getting a new Garfield movie.
Yeah.
Aren't we?
Yeah, no.
Or did
yeah,
we already
we are.
Get a new Garfield movie?
I don't think it's out yet. I think somebody would have talked about Chris Pratt's, I assume, bad performance as Garfield.
Okay, it's coming out May 24th of this year. That's insane.
That's so soon. I don't want to watch it, please. Please and thank you.
I'm looking at the cast list for this Garfield movie, and everybody who isn't Chris Pratt is truly a get. Like, Samuel L. Jackson's in it. one of the angry people from Ted Lasso's in it. Ving Rhames is in it. I'm like looking at this cast list and I'm like, you know what? I but also, you know, I feel like this franchise, Hoodwinked.
Mm.
Now I look at this list and I go, yeah, these are all good people, but that means that the movie's probably gonna be bad.
Yeah, it really locks that into your mind, huh? That, like, well, maybe they got a bunch of good people because they know it's not going to be any good. And, like, I genuinely think that happened with the Mario movie. You can't just have one Jack Black song and make it a good movie.
It's a good Jack Black song, though.
They either need to put more Jack Black songs in it.
The Mario movie should have been about Bowser. Whole, like, full stop. Because that's the character that Bowser has so much more character than Mario throughout the games.
Mario is not interesting by himself. That is true. The problem with the Mario movie, as far as I know, is it's basically just a bunch of references to the games, but each Mario game changes the world so much that if they really wanted to make it good, they wouldn't have made it references to games. They would have had him turn to a fucking elephant or something like he does in the most recent one, because that's just some dumb shit that you're allowed to do in Mario World.
It kicks ass so much, that game. That game is so good.
But, like, there's originality there that there isn't in the movie.
That's also the other problem, is that Mario is so, as, like, a piece of animation, right? I feel like when we talk about video games, we don't often talk about the animation. But, like, of all the video games that have really defined themselves by having top-notch animation, you play a Mario game, and the animation of Mario is so ingrained. Like, how he moves, how he runs, how he jumps, that I have seen people put those animations into other games, and I'm like, that's Mario. That's a Mario animation. Like,
is just Mario.
Yeah, that's how familiar it is. And how do you translate that like inherent understanding of movement into a film?
I do not have an answer for this, if that's what you're wondering.
No, I don't think anyone does. Yeah, God, you know, I think one of the best thing about Hoodwinked and Hoodwinked 2 is that they were so bad. They were so boring and devoid of content that this might be one of the few things in my life that I can forget.
You'll never be reminded of it. Like, there will be nothing to remind you that this exists.
Mm-hmm. Unlike Shrek.
Unlike Shrek, there's a lot of things to remind you that Shrek exists.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to Direct to Video.
VHS.
I have been your host, Tony Robusto.
I have been your host, Andy Reyes.
You can find me at TheaterBats on Blue Sky and inspiredbytrueevents.org. The Kickstarter that my story is in is still going on.
Hell yeah. Get on it.
It's 100% funded, so it's definitely happening. But if any more money goes to it, then I get paid more.
Get on it.
Yeah. So here's what I'm going to do. If you send a receipt to mail at direct2.video, I'm going to save everybody who sends me a receipt to that, and then I will send you an audiobook version of the story that I'm doing.
Oh, hell yeah.
I wanted to make an audiobook version anyway, so it's a good way to make me do it. Andy, where can they find you?
They can find me at direct2.video, obviously, here, but also you can find me at timehonoredpictures.com, a project in which me and my partner are trying to watch every Academy Award winning film in chronological order, who has won Best Picture and Best Director. It is more historical, I think, than this. So, you know, go check it out if that's what you're interested in.
Sorry that I didn't teach everybody about the fall of Rome in our Hoodwinked episode.
You know,
I forgot that was my job.
I gave you the layup. I brought it up. I was like, now Tony can talk about the year of the three emperors, and we're good. And you didn't. All right. I hope I got that reference right. I mean, that's just the project as a whole is a little bit less focused on, you know,
goofy shit.
Yeah, it's less focused on goofy shit, you know, and more focused on just, like, you know, what is this movie doing to you?
Did somebody lie about what a wealth countryside is like?
Yeah. Weird historical shit like that.
So next time we're going to watch Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, huh?
Yeah. I'm really excited about this.
I think it'll be a release. Okay, one more time. Don't forget to pledge to A Summer of Sci-Fi and Fantasy Volume 3 on Kickstarter, and then email me about it, mail at direct2.video.
Hell yeah.
And thank you to Scott Buckley
Huge
for
thanks.
Our theme song, Homeward.
which should be playing right now.
Oh my gosh, I hope so. Unless we start talking for like 5 more minutes, then what are we doing, Andy?
I live in fear every day that a new Swan Princess movie has come out. You know that? Do you know that I check every month if it's happened yet? Because it feels like it can't, right?
You gotta keep getting those tax breaks, Andy. I am the ghost of John Smith.
And I am the ghost of John Smith. I don't have an outro yet.
Can you just take mine? It seems gauche.
It's reparations, Tony. I'm gonna stop recording now.
Yeah.
Unlike you, I have not watched anything good recently. In the middle of watching Hoodwinked 2. Oh, I was watching it on YouTube, by the way. It's free with ads.
Oh, okay. I got it from the library. Your local library is the place where you can go to get Hoodwinked 2, Hood versus Evil. And also, also Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
Truly a wonder.
If you were to pick one movie that was... sort of stuck trying to outgrow being just a big Shrek reference, you would want, again, one of the best movies I have ever seen, and not Hoodwink 2.
That is
evil.
That valid and true. I didn't skip a single ad, Tony. That skip button was there, tempting me, right? And every time I was like, no, I could... It's State Farm, you know? I like State Farm. State Farm guy. Oh, there's an ad for Wish on Disney Plus. This is the best animation I've seen in a month. Yeah, I'll watch the whole thing. It's just a scene from the movie. I didn't skip a single ad, Tony, because every time an ad came on, I was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.